I would agree with you, but then we'd both be wrong. It's the news, according to me. Good Thursday morning. It is Thursday morning. Yeah, I had quite a day yesterday. I would agree with you, but then we'd both be wrong. This is on my cup. That's the saying that's on my cup here. It says, I would agree with you, but then we'd both be wrong. Kind of funny. So we have, while I'm on the subject of my cup here, what I have in my cup is chai with Cinnabon creamer, freshly opened Cinnabon creamer. That's good stuff. However, in my backup cup, I have, guess what? Sweet tea. But what's in my sweet tea? I have some V8 Fusion. I've realized I haven't been drinking much V8 Fusion. I used to drink it all the time. I used to drink about a cup a day, at least. I would mix it with tea or whatever. Sometimes I just drink it straight. I don't think they call it V8 Fusion anymore. They call it something. Just call it something else. They don't call it Splash. Don't get the Splash. Splash is crap. Splash is not good for you. If you think you're getting something good drinking Splash, you're not. Don't give that stuff to your kids. Now, I don't know that the Fusion is much, much better. However, it is supposedly all real fruits and vegetables. Splash is like 2% fruits and vegetables or something ridiculous like that. It's mostly sugar water. Not unlike most drinks nowadays for kids. However, and you know, sweet tea is probably pretty much just sugar water with... That's really all it is, I guess. Here I am beating the desk for that. Just don't give it to your kids. Well, you can give sweet tea to your kids. I don't know. Just don't. Coca-Cola, I think, is worse. It's got more. You know, the soda pop stuff has other stuff in it. All kinds of stuff in it. It never goes bad, other than just loses its carbonation. It's got, you know, so much preservative stuff in it. Anyway, I believe my cat, apparently, has decided to start his own show. I'm kind of wondering where he's posting it, because I come in here this morning and there were several recordings. Now my little mixer here, I have a Rodecaster Pro. This device, it's the original, the first one that came out. And they've got a Rodecaster Pro 2, I think, now. And they got a couple other little cool little gizmos that seem to work pretty well. Now, this particular one, it's interesting. I've got this video up here in the background. There's a guy with it's a Rode, but I don't know what it is. It has more buttons than mine does. It has, it has fewer sliders. It must be the Nouveau or whatever it's called, the smaller version. Anyway, it's a pretty popular mixer because it's got all these things you can do. Like, you know, you can play things in the background. Yeah, it's funny. I know it's funny. Yeah, I know. Yeah, yeah. And you've got, well, thank you. I don't know what to say. You folks are just... Oh, you were kidding. You're all kidding. Oh, well. Then just, yeah.
Good morning.
Oh.
Sunday morning.
I can even put clips like that in there. It's got all these little buttons on the side. It's got 8 buttons on the side. You can just, you know, and then it's got multiple layers. So you can put, I've got like 10 pages of those. I can go through and put all kinds of stuff in. So I can go to page 2. Anyway, I just, needless to say, I have, a Rodecaster. So the cat, it's got these big buttons on it. Well, one of the big buttons up there at the top is called a record button. And the cat apparently steps on that occasionally and starts recording. It's got its own little SD card inside there. I think it's like 132 gigabyte SD card. Well, apparently the cat likes to record for hours and sometimes just minutes. I go through all the podcasts and I just hear, you know, noises of him playing around on the desk here with stuff. And so apparently he's running around making recordings. And even some of the sliders were moved. Sliders were moved, mute buttons were pushed. So hopefully this recording is going to work. I don't know what's going to happen here, but He just wants to be just like me. He thinks he can be like me. So we have some interesting things in the news. A couple of stories I want to get to. One, there's something I want to bring to your attention. This, I think, I don't know how long ago this video had been done. If I still have it up here, I'm not sure if I've still got it up here or not. Let's see if I still have it in my, I think I have it in my downloads. But I do want to give mention to this because it is really articulate and I think very well done video. It was done, let's go back all the way over here. It's had 3.2 million views. It's been out there for a while. It doesn't say when it was done. It was T.RexArms. T.RexArms is the name of the channel. Let's see if I can pull this up here real quick. And he's talking about suppressors. This was 3 years ago. That's why he's got 3 million views. So this is 3 years ago. This is when Donald Trump was even still president. Because he talks a little bit about the president's reaction to bump stocks as well as to suppressors. Every lawmaker on the planet, at least in this country, needs to take the 30 minutes, and you can play it at 1.25 times. It won't take you 20 minutes. It is worth listening to on your lunch break. In fact, I think this should all be required. If you're going to vote on gun legislation, you should hear this video. Now, the video is about suppressors. It's commonly called silencers, because that's what they were patented as, silencers, but they're really suppressors. They don't silence a gun. You can't have, unless you're using subsonic ammunition and it's very powerful, it's like a 22 long rifle subsonic. But all you're going to hear is the clicking of the gun. Suppressors have been vilified somehow. Pierce Morgan was, I think, interviewing the president, and he asked him, the most recent crime, someone had a suppressor on one of their guns, a silencer. He said, a silencer on one of their guns, and do you plan to ban those? Well, yeah, I don't like them. I don't like them. What is it you don't like about them? This guy makes the argument. In fact, they were almost, there was very close, there was legislation almost came through to deregulate them. They are regulated just like an automatic machine gun, automatic fire gun. And it amazes me the way this thing has been vilified and never really justifiably. Most of the crimes committed with silencers, with suppressors, out of the 34 or 44 a year, whatever it was, the 40 so a year, give or take five, are mostly process crimes. Somebody didn't do paperwork correctly because you have to pay for a $200 stamp, and then you have to file all kinds of paperwork. It takes 6 months to a year to get your permit. And that's for one suppressor. Now, I think the market right now has about a million of them in out there somewhere. And it's very easy to build your own. If criminals really saw the advantage of quietly sneaking in and shooting somebody, they could make their own. That was really a big deal. It's not. However, it is a kind of a big deal for someone protecting their home or for using the weapon at a firing range. It makes the firing range much more user-friendly. You still have to wear hearing protection if you are using it yourself. However, somebody else downrange would not necessarily need it in hearing protection because by the time it gets to them, it's not going to be as loud. But it's still in the range. And most guns, most powerful guns, not a 22 long rifle, but it something that's got some power to it is going to have enough. I'm not even sure a 22 long rifle actually fired from a rifle. I don't think I would even wear hearing protection for that. It's a very high frequency snap. Now, if you're firing it from a 22 Beretta, short barreled handgun, that thing, it makes a very loud, high pitched crack. It will hurt your ears. Now, here's the advantage that a homeowner has in having a suppressor. One, it builds stabilization. It's the gun's heavier. It's going to be easier to stay on target, which is why the police and the military use them for the most part. Plus, they don't give away their location as easily, especially for military. But for law enforcement, yes, it is, does make it longer, makes it more cumbersome, but it also gives more stabilization. It helps to keep the noise level down. If you're in the middle of the night, somebody breaks into your home and you pull out your gun, you get into a firefight. Your ears, you're by the time the police show up to clean up the mess that you made with the perps in your house, they're not going to clean up the mess. I think USCCA, I think, has actual insurance you can get to clean up the mess afterwards. But I know it's a kind of a morbid thought, but that's the reality of what happens afterwards. The advantage it gives you is if without the suppressor, you're not going to be able to hear. The police officer is going to speak to you asking questions. You're not going to be able to hear him. Your ears are going to be hurting. They're going to be ringing still from what just happened. And with a suppressor, you have more awareness because chances are you're not going to get up. You're not going to put your hearing protection on before you grab your gun. Unless you sleep with your hearing protection in. Some people do that. Then you're not going to hear the perp. He's going to walk off with your kids. You wake up in the morning, hey, what happened last night? I don't know. I had my earplugs in all night. Kids are gone. I'm not sure what happened. This recently happened. This was a story. I think this has been a while back, but one guy was covering this particular story where this guy calls police and the police show up and find out that the perpetrator who had busted into the house was already dead because this guy, this perp, went after this guy's children. He was in his children's room, I think is the way I understand it, and he was trying to make off with the kids, trying to grab one of them and take off with them. And he shot him. Dead. Now, I don't know of any parent out there who would not rip the throat out of... Well, there are parents, there are people out there who would say they wouldn't do that. They wouldn't. They would just... There are people who I think would act differently than what they say they will. But I brought this up the other day, this whole pacifist thing. Now, it's one thing to be anti-war. It is very different to be a 100% pacifist. And the moral implications there, just, I don't think they've wrapped their head around some of the things that they're saying. I don't think they really understand what they're saying. Because frankly, if I look over and see someone attacking my neighbor, what they'll say is, well, you just call the police. Okay, so you're not going to resist, but you're going to you're going to hire somebody to do the job for you. So a guy who's going to show up with a gun to protect the situation, but you're so morally superior to that person that's, somebody's got to do it. By the time the police show up, it's maybe too late. It just blows my mind sometimes, the reasoning of some of these people and their high horse mentality, false morality. It is false morality. It's not moral at all. They haven't thought through these situations at all. It's based on this feeling thing, feeling like, oh, I can... I won't go down that path again. I already have. But so we have some things happening in the world out there, the big bad world. One of the things that was brought up, the typical, and this is this guy brings this up in this video about the suppressor thing, but he brings up this whole thing of how interesting it is that the government, and they've done this for years. This is what they do. I'm going to pull. Yeah, see what we got going on. Yeah. What they've been doing this for years. What the government does, what the legislatures do, and this has become an art form on the left. They will do something to scare the people, to create a crisis. They've been doing this for 100 years. They create this fear. They create this, and then they generate, people will flock to them to protect them. Okay, the government needs to protect us. Go ahead, spend money. Create legislation. The Patriot Act. We need the Patriot Act, which was anything but patriotic. Destroyed, literally trampled over our Bill of Rights. Gun legislation that very clearly the Constitution says you have the right to keep, which means own, and bear, which means carry. And it shall not be infringed. And if you look at the spirit of what they're saying there with that whole thing of the right of the people, the militia, well-regulated militia, whatever it is. If you look at the spirit of what they're saying there, it actually means that those arms aren't muskets. They are whatever the current standard issue military grade weapons are. That's what the people should have. Because frankly, if we are ever attacked, that's what we need to have. Unfortunately, the attack doesn't come from external things as much as it does internal things. At the time that machine guns were being regulated and made illegal, I think that there were only like 1,500 of them total in the whole country, ever made by Thompson. Thompson was the first original Tommy gun, machine gun builder. It was right after World War I. And they built them for the war effort, but then the war was over before they got them built. This guy goes through the whole process on this video. I'm telling you what's in the video. But that, and so sales were down. So the movie theaters, so they got this, all this fallacy stuff going on with theater and what they think, you know, guy puts a silencer on his gun. Now he's, that's all you hear. And have gunfights, like in, is it John Wick, I think, has a gunfight going on. They show clips of this thing where they're walking down through an airport, having a gunfight, nobody hears them, shooting at each other. Expert marksman who can shoot a dime in the air, whatever they're doing. And they're walking down through the airport, 50 feet from each other, and they're shooting at each other, probably 50 rounds, not hitting each other. Or anybody else. Guns aren't, bullets aren't bouncing off anything, going anywhere. Nobody's noticing it. Amazing. This is just the kind of drama stuff that people believe. It's just, you put the silencer on, now you're deadly. Now you're even more deadly. So, a couple things happening. Apparently there's, I'm not going to get into the whole submarine thing. We have interesting developments among the press corps concerning the Joe Biden issue. And by the Joe Biden issue, I mean the Hunter Biden tweets now that they're coming out. Now, this came out with another one. There's another one that's been released by somebody. I don't know. There's an official source that's been releasing these. And they're not leaks. They're not leaks like what's happening on President Trump's side of things. really good liberal hive mind. It's a guy that does videos. I've been following him. He kind of spelled it out pretty clearly why it's so ridiculous that they're just going absolutely ape nuts over this audio that was released of Trump saying something about, he's in this meeting and he's talking about, and I mentioned this yesterday. I'm surprised and I'm amazed, I guess I'm shocked almost, at the way the media is talking about, he's talking about classified documents. Oh, he has classified documents right there on the table. It amazes me how we seem to think. They make it sound like classified documents are somewhere in some lofty place where no one is allowed to look at them or talk about them. Or also, that's classified. Nobody can have any access to it. Nobody can talk about it. Somehow it becomes this thing, well, we have to lock all those things away and nobody can have access to them. They just materialized on their own. Who gets clearance to those? Who grants clearance to those things? Who has clearance to them? And what's the use having them if we can't look at them? And who's ultimately in charge of all those things? Almost all of them fall under the executive branch of what is classified and what is not. Guess who presides over the executive branch? The president of the executive branch, the president of the United States. And by the way, he's the president of the executive branch. He's not the president of the world. He's not the president of the country even. He's the president. He presides over the executive branch. Theoretically, technically, when he issues an executive order, it's only for anyone who falls under the jurisdiction of the executive branch. It has become this executive order privilege thing that, the president's going to issue an executive order and he's going to make everybody do something. I think that could be challenged. Now, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a Supreme Court judge, by the way, either. I don't know. But I do know that the separation of powers and those who, you know, in charge of legislation cannot be judge over what is constitutional and what's not. I know that the SCOTUS cannot change legislation, which happened in the John Roberts case with Obamacare. He changed the law. Well, we just have to change this one phrase and then we can pass it, because it has to be passed as a tax. Has to be seen as a tax. Really? So you can just alter it now, we're just going to tweak this a little bit over here. I'm going to change some of these words around. And now, there you go. Now it's constitutional. That's not his job. His job is to reject it, say it's unconstitutional, bring it back when you change this. That's the legislator's job. What he did there was grossly negligent. And people brought it up. There are constitutional, I'm not the one who came up with this idea. There are constitutional scholars who said that was not proper protocol. Now, would it have gone through again? And here's the thing. It takes time to go back and do it right. And it's possible that in taking the time to do it right, they had all this, that it made something might have changed. Now, but here's the problem. All this pomp and circumstance they had around signing the bill, and Joe Biden said, this is a big effing deal to right in front of everybody to the president. Speaking of Joe Biden, I'm going to go here. Joe Biden recently, everybody's talking about something that Joe did over the weekend, over the last couple of days. He snapped at a reporter. And I mean snapped. They were asking him about his son, the Chinese issues and all the stuff. Were you in the room? All that kind of stuff. He just looks around with that stupid laugh. I can't believe you're asking me this question. I can't believe it. Can you be looking around at everybody like, can you believe this person's going to ask me this question? Can you believe it? This is crazy. Are you crazy? What he's doing is he's buying time, trying to figure out how he's going to answer this question, because he knows he was in the room. He knows all this stuff happened. He knows he's squirming around trying to weasel out of this whole thing. The only way he's going to get away with this, and I guarantee you, well, there's two ways. One is just the media continues to ignore it, and they just, everybody, the GOJ, everybody lets it slide, and nobody brings it up, and they just continue to run out the clock on it. The other way that this can happen is that they create some kind of huge crisis that gets everybody's mind off of it. And this has happened before. This kind of thing happens at the most opportunistic times. All I'm saying is it a coincidence? I don't know. But time and time again, things happen. And all of a sudden, the problem goes away. Everybody forgets about it, and there's nothing done about it. What was the one thing that Donald Trump could run on in 2020 that was probably the big thing? The big thing that he had in his pocket that nobody could argue about. The economy. The economy was rip-roaring strong. Things were coming back. Well, here we are rolling around in 2019, 2018, 2020, 2020 and 20. And the one thing that they did at the beginning of the cycle, all of a sudden, we got to shut down the economy. We have to shut everything down. We have to lock things down tighter than the drum. Yeah, we got to shut this economy down. Because somebody in a lab in Wuhan who was working on gain of function of a virus accidentally let it out. The one country that, by the way, that we're kind of pushing against and keeping under control and slowing down, competing with, happened to release the virus somehow. Accidentally, apparently, allegedly. And just happened to shut our economy down. By the way, they didn't shut down. Just Wuhan, so shut down. Everything, every place else stayed open. Interestingly enough, how that works out. Anyway, I'm just saying, think what you will. I'll let you draw your own conclusions there, but there you go. So during this whole time, now Joe Biden, of course, now we find out that right before that and during those times, even since he's been president, there's been some things going on. They can hide him a lot better now that he's president. But so we have... This reporter was asking him questions, and the thing that nobody's talking about here again. This is getting back to the whole story of Trump's audio. I think I said something about this yesterday, and it's worth repeating. So I will repeat it because it's worth it. Because you paid a lot of money to hear me say this again. So I'm going to reiterate. The story is the real story that everybody's glossing over, not talking about, is what Trump was talking about the documents. General Milley approaches Donald Trump and says, we need to attack Iran. Here's the battle plan. This is classified, top secret. Can't let anybody know about it. Can't show this to anybody. It's classified. We can't talk about this. Can't mention this outside of this room. But here you go. General Milley turns around and tells everybody, Nancy Pelosi. I believe this was actually orchestrated by Nancy Pelosi. I don't think General Milley came up unless Nancy Pelosi said, we got to do something to stop this guy. We got to get him out of office. Well, how about this? We pretend like he's trying to attack Iran. I can come up with a battle plan. I'll talk him into it and get him convinced that we need to attack Iran. And And in the process, I'll step up and say, no, this, we can't allow this to happen. We got to get this guy out of office. He's nuts. Because this is who they think Donald Trump is. The one man who never started a war in his entire term of president. And General Milley comes out and publicly states to officials, not to the press, to officials before the press, in front of the press, I'm concerned that this president wants to start a war before he leaves office to somehow keep his grip on power. And it was Milley who approached Trump with this idea of attacking Iran. That's the story. The story is Milley was trying to set Trump up. At least that's what Trump is alleging here. Now, did Trump say, hey, show me how, if we were going to attack Iran, send me the battle plan for that. I want to see the battle plan for what we would do if we were going to attack Iran. And he sent it to him, and then Trump is going to use that. Maybe Trump's the fiend here, you know, because, you know, Trump started so many wars. Well, it's very obvious to me that General Milley has it in for Donald Trump, and he's the one who would concoct something like this. Oh, well, government officials wouldn't, a general wouldn't do something like that. Oh, no, and an FBI agent wouldn't do something like that either, would they? Wouldn't come up with a dossier paid for by Hillary Clinton campaign and then promote that thing. Well, this is our insurance policy. There's no way he wins because this is our insurance policy. This is coming from the FBI, the nonpartisan, apolitical organization. It just wants to protect our Constitution and uphold our laws. I don't get politically involved in anything. No reasonable, she did do all this stuff, but no reasonable prosecutor is going to go after her for this. No reasonable, in other words, if a prosecutor stepped up then and said, I'm going to go after her, they would say, you're the unreasonable one. Oh, you're already labeled. You're already unreasonable. Oh, but Donald Trump had a phone call where he was trying to get another foreign leader to investigate what was going on his end with Burisma and everything else that was going on with Joe Biden and his son and all the corruption that was going on over there that we're now finding out was real. But he was impeached for that. He was impeached for going to another leader of another country and saying, hey, there's been some nefarious things going on here. And if you don't mind, if you could look into some of this, because I think this guy's a shyster. I'm not even sure what that means. But he's a bad dude. He's a bad egg. And we really can't have him running the country. Oh, you're going after a political enemy. Now they're trying to throw Trump in jail. I'm convinced. I'm totally convinced Trump will go to jail. I believe they will do everything and anything they can to put him in prison. I just had this little revelation today that, and I think it will literally, it could potentially start a civil war. Maybe it won't, but it could. It could really get ugly. I had this little, I don't want to call it premonition, whatever it was when I was waking up this morning. And I saw a debate stage with all the GOP candidates. All the presidential candidates. I don't know if they were GOP. They're all the presidential candidates were up there. So it might have been a general debate, whatever it was. All these other people who were supposed to debate each other about the president for the presidency. And there was a podium there that was empty. An empty podium. And it had a little name tag on it, Donald Trump. They were all talking about where Donald Trump couldn't make it because he's in jail. And they were making a big deal out of that. This was a show thing. Oh, look, he's in jail. He can't be here because he's in jail. They would love to time it so that he's put in prison put in jail at the time that now they don't. He doesn't have to be convicted of anything to have to have him put in jail. By the way, in fact, I'm convinced if that trial down in Miami had been held in D.C., they would have detained him throughout the trial so that they could press for a quick trial. See, he's right now down in Miami. He wants to take his time. You have the right to a speedy trial. That doesn't mean you have to have a speedy trial. You can ask for delays because we have to do all kinds of research. There's discovery. We got to do all this stuff. We have witnesses we have to interview. It's going to take way more time. You can show the complexity to the judge, and the judge can say, okay, we're going to postpone this for 6 months or for 3 months, whatever you need. You don't have to have a speedy trial. Now, if the government, on the other hand, says, well, it's going to take us, we're going to put you in jail for, 6 months or a year until you have a trial, which happens in some cases. Look at what's happening in January 6th, guys. And part of that issue is discovery on the defense's side. They can't get any evidence from the government. They're slow walking all the evidence so they're keeping them in prison all this time. They are political prisoners. Don't get me wrong. They don't make any mistake about that. These people, Ray Epps of all people. Now this, I'm not mad at Ray Epps. Well, I kind of am actually. I'm mad at Ray Epps, but just on a personal level. Whoever's behind him, and I have a feeling it's not the FBI, and it's not the DOJ. Maybe it is the DOJ. I have a feeling, just a hunch, that he was directly commissioned by Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi is the one person who's never spoken of this guy. She's never talked about him. Nancy Pelosi had her daughter following her around on January 6th, pretending to make this, keeping an eye on everything that was going on, had a camera on her all day long to do a documentary on what happened on January 6th. Where's that documentary at, by the way? As well as any other documentaries that this lady has done. Let's just take a look here. She's supposedly a documentarist. She's a documentary film writer, filmmaker. Nancy Pelosi, daughter, documentary. Let's see what we got here. What's the long list of documentaries that she's done? Produced a revealing new documentary. Let's see here. Documentary shot by daughter Alexa. An Associated Press documentary of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's life and groundbreaking political career. All of her documentaries are about her mom. There's a very toxic energy circulating Alexandria Pelosi on her mom, dad, and new documentary. This is the lady who said that Nancy Pelosi, she would cut off your head. How is it? She would cut your head off and you wouldn't even know you're bleeding. Something to that effect, I don't know. She's still raw from the hammer attack on her father. I have not. So this is just recent. So that's Journey's Dirt. With a camera as her constant companion on occasion, an occasional irritant, and those are blah, 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 blah. Yeah, where's the list of stuff here? I don't know. So let's look at, let's see if there's a Wikipedia. There's got to be a Wikipedia on her somewhere. Let's see if we can do this. We're going to come down here. Just going to do that. Copy that. And we're going to see if we can find a Wikipedia. Because there's got to be something of a list of... Certainly, there's got to be a list of... All right, here we go. It's a Wikipedia. Let's go here and see what we got. Big, long list here of documentaries. Oh, there she is. She's got a picture of her holding a camera with a flag behind her. October 5th, 1970. She's about 52 years old, I guess, 50, 53. Yeah, she did in 2001. She worked for HBO. 14 documentary films, of which 13 were collaborations with Sheila Nevins. Never heard of her either. The 2004 dramatic primaries, Pelosi returned to the campaign trail, this time following the dramatic candidates her HBO documentary, Diary of a Political Tourist, which I'm sure she was following her mom around the whole time. It's Candy Crowley, of CNN. It's all based, it's all rooted here in the stuff with HBO, CNN, and MSNBC, mostly CNN. I went back to the campaign trail in 2008 to document the birth of the Tea Party movement. She was, I remember a little bit of that. There was a, she must have been the lady who did the hit piece on the Tea Party movement and it turned it into a racist event. It was all racism. There were people on the left who actually believed. I went downtown to the courthouse when they had a Tea Party. It was a phony Tea Party. It was Republican candidates down there making speeches. There was a few people that made some speeches, but it was all Republican candidates down there making speeches at the time. And I showed some pictures of video, I think on Facebook, of, you know, being downtown. And the TEA stood for Taxed Enough Already. Had nothing to do with Obama's race. Obama was going to start taxing us. He had put into place the whole thing of he was going to raise taxes. Necessarily raise taxes. Well, that was where the whole movement, it started off as a grassroots movement. In other words, people, it wasn't politicians that started this movement. Politicians got involved. The Republican Party tried to hijack it and get on the wave and ride the wave and start to lead that whole thing. Oh, yeah, I'm all for this. Let's get on this. Let's help them out. And they hijacked it, took it over. It became a Republican thing. Well, unfortunately, the left was able to spin this into, this is just a bunch of racists. They're all racist because they hate Donald. They hate Barack Obama, and they hate the black president. They're just coming out against him. This is a wave of racists. Now, the video I took was all these old folks sitting around with their little signs. Nobody, all we were saying is taxed enough already. There's no, don't raise our taxes. We pay enough in taxes. Nothing about white supremacy or the black president, nothing about that at all. But that's how they took it. And they apparently were successful in pushing that narrative on the left. Because I had people respond to me who were leftists, strangely enough, from the West Coast. Really? You went to this. So that's the kind of people you are. I'm just really shocked that you guys would do that, that you would participate in such a thing. And I had no idea what they were talking about at the time. I had no idea that this was being associated with a white supremacist movement. None. I had no idea of that. There was no talk of that. Nothing that I heard was anything about race. It was all about taxes and what the big government thing was planning on being to be. And everybody joked about him being a socialist. I mean, there was even people on the left said, oh, yeah, well, you know, he's a socialist. He's got a socialist mop. That's a socialist mop. You can't use that mop to clean things up. But just stuff like that. It had nothing to do with his race. And if you want to talk about the one guy who could have done something to bring racial relations back to a better position in this country, to heal, to do some healing in this country, was Barack Obama. What did he do? He pitted us against each other. He just turned up the heat. People like Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, Spike Lee, all these people who promote this crazy rhetoric. Now, I just heard it was a really good Jesse Lee Peterson. I don't know if you ever heard Jesse Lee Peterson. If you get a chance, check him out. He's amazing. Anyway, I really like Jesse Lee Peterson. Now, he says some pretty beyond the pale things sometimes. He'll make some statements that I'm like, well, no, come on, guy. That's a little too far. I get what he's saying. And you have to take him for the spirit of what he's saying. But he is an excellent troll with regard to trolling people on the left. Now, he's a black guy, if you want to call him that, I guess. He probably wouldn't even call himself that. But he's he goes after this guy. And oh, stand by. There's he's debating something with this guy. It is hilarious. I mean, it's the way he goes after him. He starts asking him if he's the head of his household, if he's the head of his wife, that kind of thing. He starts asking him these questions, and he's talking about racism in general and all this other stuff, and he's going back and forth with all this stuff. And this guy brings up how the guy he's interviewing, the guy says something about the white man stole everything from us. And he said, what has the white man stolen from you? And he was asking him personally, what is a white man stolen from you? And he said, well, as a culture, as a people, my ancestors, he went through this whole list of things. They stole our language. They stole our, everything that the white man has, they stole from us. They stole all of our inventions. They stole all of this. They stole all of that. And of course, and then he said, now they won't give us jobs. They won't provide us with jobs. They won't give us a job. They won't do it, blah, blah, blah. And he starts asking he goes down this whole list of stuff and he just blows the guy away. And he makes some kind of outlandish statements a couple times. Now, Jesse Lee Peterson grew up in the South I think he was in Louisiana or Alabama or someplace down there where the Jim Crow laws were in effect. And so he's lived through all that stuff. But he does not blame the white man for anything. He's blaming the black culture for how ridiculous they are. And everything that this guy came back and basically was saying about how the white man stole everything from them and did blah, 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 stole our this, stole our that, and built this entire country on free labor and blah, 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 everything they built. So, they deserve all this stuff because they built this country. This all comes from something called black liberation theology. And if you look into that, most people will not even touch this with a 10-foot pole. I will bring it up, and I think it's a heresy. I think it is a gospel that is not a gospel. This is a twisted version of what Scripture says. And the BLT movement is a racist. It goes beyond racialism. It goes into a racist movement, the hate the white man mentality. It is every bit as counterintuitive as the KKK. It says nothing, not one thing about forgiveness and reconciliation. Nothing. It's reparations. They owe us. We're the oppressed. It convinces everyone that you're oppressed and you have no hope unless they capitulate and give us everything that they have. And Jesse Lee Peterson sees through that. He sees the actual abomination that kind of a theology, that kind of philosophy is, the ideology of that. And I contend that ideology is woven through everything in what we're seeing right now in the wokeism that we're seeing. There is a spiritual component, a spiritual foundation in that stuff that it comes from. And I think that it's not the BLT thing that causes the spiritual thing. It's the spiritual thing that the BLT was birthed from. And that same spirit is the same thing that's going on with a lot of the quacky wokeness going on right now. And there was a, I wish I thought I had saved it. I can't find it. There was one thing I was going to play today. And it is absolutely, It sickens my stomach at the same time. It's shocking at the same time. I really don't expect anything different from it. This lady, she's a minister in some kind of church, the sparkly church or whatever it's called. I don't know what it's called. They have so twisted and perverted the gospel. She gets, we're going to now recite the sparkly creed or whatever it is. She's wearing a robe and she's got the little scarf around her neck, the whole thing, whatever they call it, the banner, whatever that goes around their neck, the whole thing, all dressed up. And she's reading from this thing, and everybody's reading with her. I don't know how many people were in the congregation. You couldn't see, probably 10. I don't know. But she's reading this whole thing. Probably actually a lot more than that. Probably out in California somewhere. It's probably San Francisco. I don't know. Who knows? And she goes on and on about how our non-binary God and Jesus, who had two dads, because, you know, he would have Joseph and then the Heavenly Father, which contradicts this non-binary God thing that they're talking about, who refers to himself, refers in the plural or whatever, because there's the triune, the Trinity, it's three. But she goes through this whole thing of which, if Jesus had two fathers, well, was one of the fathers God or was he not? Because the father is a male. Yeah, it's non-binary. How do you do that? And by the way, Joseph was not his birth father. He raised him. He adopted him as his own. But he was not his own. It takes more than just your seed to be a father to someone. But nonetheless, we won't get into that. So we have, but it's just sickening to listen to this creed spoken of. But this is the kind of thing. And it's all done in response to it's a form of rebellion against God. That's what this is. It's about rebellion. It's not about submission, forgiveness, take up your cross, die to yourself, and follow me. That's not what this is about. This is about, look at us and how good we've become, how further enlightened and spiritually centered we are. We are one with God. We are in tune with him. And we are further elevated. We've discovered something that no other civilization on earth has done. Now, there was a really good thing, Michael Knowles, he's on Daily Wire. He's actually been probably one of the more pungent bloviators on the Daily Wire. I used to listen to Andrew Klavan all the time. And after the election, Andrew Klavan lost a lot of credibility because of some things that he said about the election. And I know that there's a lot of his fans are still out there, I'm sure. And I'm not a fan, but I don't listen to his stuff anymore. And then there's who's the head honcho over there? Not Jason Bourne, who kind of is the main director of everything. Ben Shapiro is kind of the lead guy that's in charge of that whole thing. And Ben, I love him, and but I also disagree with a lot of stuff he says. Now he's very good at debating, extremely talented in that respect, knows how to get a point across, knows how to defend himself in a point. Sometimes that can be a detriment to yourself because you always have to win the argument. And I see a little bit of that in him, but anyway, Michael Knowles, he's at a college campus, and this lady gets up, and she's a typical, you know what they look like. And she's up there, and she's talking about how I would like to just first acknowledge that we are on the ground, the sacred ground of the such and such Indian or indigenous tribe or whatever it was, who've been here from time and immemorial. They basically just sprouted up out of the earth right there, right? On that property, right there, probably where that building was built. They literally grew up out of the ground, spontaneously just vaporized right there. Vaporized, or well, I guess they weren't vaporized. They were the opposite of vaporization. They just came from the vapor, solidified right there. And then they had and of course they were part of the Aztec thing there. And Michael Knowles knows a little bit about that. So something about the Turtle Island or whatever it was that was ruling in that area. And how, you know, of course, they believe that the white man came in and colonized and stole and everything. Which you can argue that all day long, but that's just what it is. There were warring factions of Native Americans. It wasn't just one big tribe here, folks. And there were tribes that were friendly, and there were tribes that were savagely fighting each other. Now, some of the countries that came in here, some of the military leaders and some of the people who were coming, they negotiated with some of them to say, well, we will protect you guys if you help us defeat, we'll help you defeat the other, you know, group, this other tribe. If you work with us, we will work with you, and we'll help you defeat the other tribe. Of course, and when they would do that, then they would, you know, manipulate them as well. The enemy of my enemy is my friend, kind of thing. But then once my friend is gone, or once the enemy's gone, you're my new enemy now. That's kind of what happens. And typically, this has been going on since Adam struck, or since Cain struck Abel. There's just division. There's just that whole thing happens. Now, to think that there was no rape, there was no murder, there was no war atrocities between tribes here in the North America or South America land. There are still cannibals on the planet, by the way. Going to try to talk to him about, well, hello, I'm here, I'm non-binary, and I am one with nature, I am one with... They will kill you and eat you. There is... That's what kind of tribes we're talking about could potentially be out there, folks. Oh, they're just indigenous people trying to protect themselves. Oh, so it's... At what point do you become indigenous? I asked this question one time. They were like, Native Americans, blah, 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 blah. How many generations do you have to be here before you're native? Do you just have to be born here? Do your parents have to be born here? Your grandparents? Your great-grandparents? Great-great-great-great-great-grandparents. My family goes back about 8 generations from me. 8 besides me. Before they were brought over here on a kidnapped ship. Sold into indentured servitude. Not by their choice. They were literally kidnapped. They did not come over here by choice. They were brought from Europe, trying to escape some of the persecution from a particular religious movement that was oppressing and martyring certain people who believe certain things. And they got kidnapped, put on a ship, and brought over here, and then sold into indentured servitude to pay for their journey. How convenient. So we have, so that went on. At what point are my descendants, how many generations is it? I asked this question one time. Somebody said 3. 3 generations. Oh, is that in a dictionary somewhere? Now you become native? So I'm a Native American now. Someone who was born in South Africa, are they African American? White people have been there for for quite a long time. Several generations have been there in South Africa. So are they African-American? Or is it based on race? Because you see, apparently the territory that you're born in doesn't matter. It's what your skin color is, or what your, whatever else you would call it, is. A lot of rambling today. A lot of just point-to-point stuff. Tomorrow's show, I don't know, by the way, what will happen about tomorrow's show. I don't know. Oh, by the way, I was going to bring up one thing about Biden. The interview, this thing where Biden snaps at this interviewer, this person asking a question. I noticed something about the way he's speaking now. And this, now I don't know what they're giving him for drugs. I don't know what's happening with him there. I do know that I'm seeing the way he's moving his mouth. He's had a lot more faux pas lately in the last month. He's saying some really crazy things. He talked about the war in Ukraine, and he called it the war in Iraq. He didn't say Ukraine, he said Iraq. And he just kept on going. He didn't correct himself. The way he is moving his jaw as he speaks, folks, we have a problem. I don't, like I said, I don't know what kind of drugs they're giving him. All I know is typically, this is what I've seen from firsthand experience. I remember this stuff after going through it with my mother. The ability to speak, the cognitive ability to speak, starts to change. And it's not long thereafter that there is this coherency that begins to go away very quickly. Now, I don't know if it has to go away quickly. Some people, maybe it does, maybe it doesn't on some people, or maybe some kind of medications keep it from going away quickly. Maybe it's going to be a slow downhill spiral, but it doesn't come back. It does not get better. It will continue to get worse. And in my opinion, I'm not a doctor, but in my opinion, from what I've observed in society and in life, this is going to be a downward trend that will probably escalate. By the time we get into the fall and by the end of the year, I'm guessing that Joe is not going to be cognitively very functional. Even though he's not very functional right now. They give him a pass on all this stuff. They let it go. News media will not report on it. Okay, fine. At some point, it's going to become painfully obvious to everyone, and you're going to have to report it. So I will leave you with that, because as we go, like I said, for the rest of the, see, tomorrow morning, I'm not sure what's going to happen tomorrow morning. Very unlikely. There's about a 50-50 chance that I will actually have a show tomorrow morning. It's not going to be a live show. Yesterday was a live show. Wednesday is the live show this week. Next week, I don't know, because Wednesday I work on a schedule next week from Tuesday through Friday, believe it or not. So Monday morning, there will probably be a show. Tuesday through Friday next week, who knows? Tuesday there might be actually be a show. Wednesday through Friday is actually the one I'm not too sure about. Tuesday morning, possibly be a show. Probably be from the boat, but I'm not positive on that. The following week, I basically have Mondays off for a couple, and weekends and Mondays off for a couple weeks here, and then, I don't know, it just goes crazy after that. So we'll find out. The music's getting loud. Hey, folks, have a great evening. Have a great weekend. God bless. Happy 4th of July.